Good morning, everyone. This is M. Sharon Baker, and welcome to our weekly Freelance Writers Den meeting. Den is the learning and support community for writers looking to grow their earnings fast. Unfortunately, Linda Formicelli was going to moderate today, but she's sick, so I'm going to be filling in. Today's meeting is about freelance writing for newspapers. Our experts are Cheryl Julian of the Boston Globe and Clay Wirestone of the Concord Monitor. After each interview, I'll spend a few minutes taking questions from listeners, which you can leave in the Q&A chat window. We're going to be talking to Clay first. Clay is an editor, writer, designer, and cartoonist at the Concord, New Hampshire Monitor. His freelance work has appeared in Mental Floss, Press Time, and the Yale Alumni Magazine. His cartoons have run in the Monitor, the Concord Insider, and the Wichita Eagle. He has also probably, contributed research to the History Channel show Only in America with Larry the Cable Guy. Clay lives in Concord with his husband, their son, and an arthritic dog. Tell us about your dog, Clay. How old is he, and is he a big or little dog?
She is about 11 to 12 years old right now, so, and she's quite large.
What kind is she?
American Eskimo, so big one, big and white and fluffy.
Yeah, big, huge. Yeah. So I'm gonna dive right in here because Linda had a lot of questions set up for you. So I guess we'll just start with what's the market like for freelance newspaper writer these days? Is there a lot of work? Is the competition stiff? What are you seeing out there?
I think the answer I'm gonna give is probably, I mean, first of all, the side of the market that I'm familiar with right now, especially talking about the Monitor, is a smaller community-oriented newspaper market. There are a lot of different sizes of newspapers, just like there's a lot of different sizes of magazines and websites, and so things vary, a lot based on the size. I think like most, what they call legacy media, and this includes newspapers, it includes magazines, it includes broadcast television, there's a lot of challenges facing newspapers right now. The irony of it is that we probably have, more readers now than ever, if you include the people that are reading newspaper websites. Just because you have a lot of readers, doesn't necessarily mean that you're making as much money as you once did. So there's a challenge there, and it certainly means that the market, as there's less money, it tends to be a little less space, at least in the printed product. And so there are, it definitely becomes more challenging, I think, for freelancers to break through. But, I mean, I certainly know that in my job as an editor at the Monitor, I work with freelancers every week. So, I mean, there certainly still are spots and opportunities available.
Now, as I remember, the Monitor is a mid-sized newspaper. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? I would say it has a very big reputation, but it has always been relatively small. Because we're here in New Hampshire, which has the first in the nation primary, it's politically has been a very important newspaper in terms of endorsements and stuff like that. But even at its highest point of circulation, its circulation was around, 20 to 25,000 a day, which for newspapers is not huge, and it is definitely down from that now. I think now we're somewhere in somewhere between 15 to 20,000 a day, and it depends on the day. The Sunday papers always, go wider and such. And then of course we've added the website, which, the way websites work, you can have, be gigantic just based on one, you can have a gigantic story.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the freelancers you're working with now and kind of what kind of stories are they helping you with?
Okay. Well, we use freelancers basically in any situation where we have coverage that doesn't fit in with what our normal staff would do. The Monitor is unusual in terms of newspapers of its size in that we still employ a fairly large number of reporters. We have 8 reporters on staff now. We're shortly going to be hiring 2 more to have a staff of 10 reporters. And most of them write a story a day. So if you think about that, in terms of a paper that only really most days has, you know, one front page and maybe one local and state page, I mean, that's actually a lot of content that's being generated in the news, you know, for the newspaper by people employed by the newspaper. But you're always going to have sections, for example, the arts section, which I'm the editor of, that, you know, those writers are going to, the people that we employ are going to be focused mainly on breaking news. So if there's art stories, you know, art gallery openings, musicians playing, you know, indie films that somebody creates, you know, who's from the area, you know, all of those are things that, yeah, one of our reporters might have time to do it, but most of the time they're going to be chasing, you know, harder news. So those kind of feature stories are definitely things we use freelancers for. We also sometimes use freelancers when there's extra news that is perhaps a little far out of our region or something that we really want to cover, but that we can't actually get a staff person there. Sometimes we'll use freelancers for that. We also have a couple of freelance photographers. This is a little out of the context of this call, I guess, but, you know, some freelance photographers and such that we've used as well.
Sure. Now, are these people that you've had a long-term relationship with, or are these people who have just pitched you out of the blue and said, hey, I'm available and local? And I guess that's my other question, is whether people
I think for folks that are on a call like this, the challenge you're going to find with newspapers is that there definitely are people that have long-term relationships with the paper. You know, certainly when I'm talking about these freelancers, I'd say, you know, of the 4 or 5 freelancers I deal with, I would say at least half of those are people that have been around for years. You know, they have, you know, they've just had that pre-existing relationship with the newspaper. They know how to pitch. They know folks here. They know how to invoice. They, you know, and they also know, I mean, because one of the things about newspapers is that you're always behind. You know, because you've got that daily deadline, it's very different from magazines in that regard. You know, with newspapers, because you're trying to put out something every day, there is never time to sit back. So these folks are very much about, you know, one of the main issues, which is, you know, not to waste our time. And that sounds really crude, and I mean, not crude, but cruel, and I don't really mean it to be cruel, but, you know, the amount of time that we have to consider this is really, you know, consider stuff like that's really small compared to all the other stuff that we're trying to do. But all that being said, you know, I have made a real conscious effort, at least at the features section of the Monitor, to bring in new and different freelancers, and there's a couple that I've, you know, kind of started some longer term work with. One that I met at I have a friend that taught a class, just like an adult oriented kind of class for people who are interested in learning about newspaper writing. And this lady was a student in my friend's class, and she talked to me after because I was a guest at the class. And this, you know, and she just seemed like a very nice person and was kind of interested in writing some feature stories. And, you know, just out of that kind of random encounter, I gave her an assignment, and the assignment went well. And, you know, she's continued to do work for me ever since.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, so yes. And there certainly have been other people that have pitched me at various times or who've been referred to me, that I've also taken a look at and have also used stories from.
Sure. So what kind of ideas would you like to see from pitches in terms of, you know, first introductions? What do you look for if someone is going to approach you or somebody's in a similar position break into that first assignment?
Yeah, well, I think there's 2 points to be made. First of all, at least for me, at a smaller paper like this, I make, you know, most of the assignments are my ideas, you know, because all the press releases come in. And so a lot of times what I do with freelancers is I will send them a press release or a lead and just say, could you write this up for next week, you know. But that being said, you know, obviously someone's, you know, when they're introducing themselves to me, you know, they're going to want to be pitching something original. So the key to that is, you've got to under, I mean, and I'm sure everyone said this to in classes at this, to people at the writer's end, but please know your market. Please know who you're pitching to. I can't tell you the number of pitches I've gotten about stuff that's out in Boston or things like that. And listen, I mean, a lot of people in Concord go to things in Boston, but Boston is an hour and a half away, you know, give or take, from Concord. It's not what the paper, we you know, that's not really what we cover. I mean, in the section, the art section we do, I really try, we have big articles in it, for it to be something that is truly local, you know, something that's within 10 or 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes of town. And, you know, that makes it a, you know, that also, of course, means that we're looking much more for local writers. But, I mean, certainly anybody in New Hampshire or even, you know, maybe somebody in northern Massachusetts could probably pitch us. It's just that they'd really have to understand what we're looking for. And that is not for something that's an hour or 2 hours away from where we are. You know, it really needs to be pitched towards the kind of articles we run. The other thing is that people, you know, we run news stories. I mean, we run journalism. And a lot of people don't understand what, I mean, even freelance folks don't really understand what journalism is in the sense that, you know, we want people to interview. I mean, we want stuff that's sourced. We want people who've done their homework, who've done research, and then who've done an interview or two for the story. We're not looking for a review. We're not looking for first person. I mean, and listen, and sometimes we have done some things that are a little different, like, you know, maybe a first person account or whatever. But, you know, we really want that, you know, for me, it's really important to have that firm journalistic, you know, foundation if I'm going to be buying something, you know, if I'm going to be running something for, like, the art section. And we have an opinion section. We have some stuff like that that's a little more on the column side of things, a little more on the personal, you know, viewpoint side. But certainly if you're looking for something that's, you know, like what I do, what I edit, that journalistic foundation is really important.
Sure. So you mentioned the art section. Are there any other sections for papers your size that people should target in terms of pitching ideas?
Well, I think, I think arts, you know, generally there's different kinds of feature sections. You know, there are sometimes sections that are a little more entertainment-oriented, you know, film or music or stuff to do on the weekend, and that's very similar, I would say. Most of the time, there do tend to be opportunities for local writers in opinion or op-ed kind of sections. I mean, the challenge for that, though, is if you're looking at a column or an op-ed environment, that's going to be much, you know, it's much less likely you're going to get, you know, that you're going to get paid for just submitting a column. And if you're interested primarily in getting paid, it's going to probably be something that's more of a reported situation, at least at first.
Sure. Now, can you give me a broad range for what kinds of fees newspapers are paying freelance writers these days?
Yeah, well, I can say what the Monitor does, which is that we have a very broad range per article. The one important thing to note about newspaper articles is that they're usually short. We're usually talking somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 700 to 1,000 words, or, you know, give or take. So they're not, you know, they're not epics. And generally the Monitor would pay, you know, kind of the bottom of our range is around $75, and then we've gone and up to people who we've worked with a little more, who sometimes it's around 100, and then I think there are some folks that get up to 150. But again, that's a really broad range. It really depends on, you know, what we're looking for, who and who the person is. It's not paid on a per word basis. I think, you know, it's paid just based on an article, you know, per piece basically.
Sure. Now, Linda said,
and larger newspapers would clearly pay more. I think they're, you know, again, just as you have a range in magazines like that.
Correct, right, yeah. Any idea how much those larger newspapers pay?
I have no idea. That would be a great thing to ask the Globe person who
Cheryl,
comes on later.
Right,
she would give you probably a better understanding there.
Sure. Now, Linda had a question here. It was, once I heard that the best way to pitch a newspaper editor is over the phone because they don't have time to consider a full query. Is this true? And if so, any tips on phone pitching?
I think this is where my personal, personally, I very much dislike being pitched over the phone. Mm-hmm. If someone pitches me over the phone, I will ask them if they have something in an email form for me to look at. A lot of that has to do with kind of the way my schedule is, which is that I have very irregular hours. I'm in and out all the time. I'm often working in the evening, so that the time that I'm kind of there to buy my phone to take that kind of pitch is very small. I will say that if you actually want to interact with the editor, like the phone is good, because certainly one of the issues with sending email queries is that if I am not immediately interested, if I am not immediately gripped by what you have, the chances that I'm going to respond to that email are pretty dicey, because again, just the volume of stuff that we work through at a daily newspaper is so big that, you know, pretty much the people that we reply to or the people that we respond to are the people that we want to have get something from, you know, and again that's kind of unfortunate, but it's just a reality of making things work, because I could literally spend probably a day a week just doing nothing but telling no to people. And this is not the freelance to pitches, but this is more like, you know, because I'm also pitched just the idea, you know, just ideas, people wanting me to cover this or cover that, you know, they're people that are putting on a play or doing a show or something like that. You know, and that's true for all departments of the paper. The amount of stuff that comes in versus the amount of stuff that we actually have space to run, is, you know, there's always a big disconnect there.
Sure. Looks like Clay, we have a lot of questions coming in the chat, so I'm going to take it from the top, and the first person is also named Sharon, and she wants to know whether you have to have a journalism degree to write for newspapers.
Not at all. A lot of people who are hired by newspapers don't have journalism degrees. You know, newspapers are one of the few places, writing in general is one of those places where it's truly about what you do. It's not about the experience or the degrees you have. I've seen people that have great degrees who can't write a news story that's worth anything. So it's truly what you can send me or what you can show me.
Sure. And then are there any, another person asks, are there any online opportunities versus in the actual publication opportunities that people could pitch?
I think, you know, certainly at the Monitor, we don't have an online product that's super separate from the newspaper product. You know, we have a lot of people who only read us online. We know that's true. But we don't have, you know, entirely separate, like, online, entirely separate, you know, blogs or sections where people can read. I think a lot of larger newspapers have done that. Certainly the Globe actually has both the BostonGlobe.com and Globe.com, which they've put apart as separate websites. One of them is free. One of them is subscription only. And so I think some of those larger papers that are experimenting with that, and I suspect that in environments like that where you have that online product, there is probably some demand for some sort of freelance content for those online products. But in general, for the Monitor, we just have kind of one content stream, and it kind of goes to print, it goes online, it goes everywhere.
Sure. Another person's interested, I guess it's Paula's interested in writing about environmental and science issues. Mm-hmm. Would those be topics that you would consider accepting pitches from, and any advice for this kind of niche?
Certainly not for the kind of section that I personally edit, but, you know, depending on the newspaper or the newspapers around where she is, there might be interest in articles like that. I mean, I think, you know, the qualification she has, and I know this goes against kind of what I was saying about the degrees, but when I say qualifications, I just meant, has she published other articles on this subject? Is she able to write with authority on the topic? you know, that would be an important factor for an editor deciding whether to go with those stories. The other issue would be is, you know, is the person actually, you know, kind of a shadow advocate, you know, is interested in writing about these subjects because she wants to advocate a particular point of view. And in kind of the newspaper environment, you know, in terms of news articles, we wouldn't be interested in articles from people like that. You know, we'd want stuff that actually had a real news hook to it, a news peg.
Right.
But that being said, you know, science and environmental stuff are definitely topics that I think there has been a lot less coverage of in newspapers recently. The specialized reporters that have covered those areas, there's not as many of them as there used to be. So certainly if you could find the right market, I think there would be some interest in stuff like that.
Sure, but you really need to clearly demonstrate your knowledge of the issues kind of in a letter of introduction, as well as offering a couple of pitches and making sure that they are pertinent to the local market, correct?
Right. I think the other thing I would really urge is, you know, to me, what I want to see is an article that the person has written. You know, it's all, I mean, a pitch is fine, an introductory letter is fine, as long as they're all short. But what I want to see is an actual demonstrated ability to write an article, you know, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be published. It just has to, you just have to be able to show me that you know how to put it together. And because to me, that's what I always ask from freelancers. I always just want to see that they're able to just actually do the article. As I said, a lot of times I assign subjects. So if I just need to know that you can sit down and do the piece.
Sure. So Clay, if I was a new person sending you maybe a letter of introduction, would it be okay if I just send you a link to my website that has a whole ton of clips on it? Or would you want something specific in that email?
I would prefer, you know, based on the time thing, I'd want something specific. And it could be a link to a specific article. You wouldn't necessarily have to include an attachment or something. But, you know, I would prefer the specific thing. Because, again,
right,
what I'm doing is I'm making really snap judgments. I'm making really quick decisions. So
right,
you should send me your absolute best thing.
Right, and I'm not wasting your time. I give you a little bit of an introduction to what I'm sending you, and then you can kind of just zip and look at it without having to hunt around my website, correct?
You know, and it's yes, exactly. And it's very easy for me to follow up. Like, if I want to know more, all I have to do is send you an email. You know, it's not like that. If you're going to do something for me, you know, we're going to have more interaction than just that first note, so.
Great. Thanks, Clay. That's a lot of great information. If you're joining us late, this podcast is brought to you by the Freelance Writers Den. Den members enjoy a wealth of benefits, including access to the junk-free job board, free writer website reviews, weekly live chats, supportive forums, and access to all Carol Tice's past e-courses and live event recordings, including the recording of this event, as well as her 4-week boot camps, which are $197 to non-members. I don't know what the next boot camp is going to be, so I'm just going to skip that and welcome our next guest, which is Cheryl Julian. She is the food editor and a food stylist at the Boston Globe and was the longtime food columnist for the Globe magazine. She trained at the Cordon Bleu schools in London and Paris and was deputy director of, can you pronounce that for me, Cheryl?
Laveraine.
Thank you.
Laveraine in Paris.
Cooking school in Paris, ran a catering service for many years, taught cooking in Boston, Washington, D.C., and Cleveland, and is the author of The Way We Cook and is editor of the new Boston Globe cookbook. She teaches food writing at the gastronomy program at Boston University. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can. We're
good.
Fine. Just to give our listeners some perspective, how many freelance pitches do you receive in a week, and how many of those are accepted?
I might receive 75 in a week, and I might accept 5 or fewer.
Sure. Do you actually read all 75, or are you just kind of skimming subject lines?
Well, if somebody writes high in the query line, you know, I can see the first line of the query. I don't even read it. I think that one of the things that freelance writers do not know is don't say hello or hi or query in the subject line, because everyone else is too, and you are never going to stand out. I'm just going to delete you after reading the first sentence. Say something. It can be story idea, blueberry farmers in Maine. It can be idea from a freelancer, you know, whatever it is, 20-year-old whiz kid farmer in Lexington, Massachusetts. But use the query line to say something.
Should we?
And yes.
Oh, should we make it Boston specific? Does that help?
Well, I am sort of New England specific, but I really want I want the majority of stories to come from Massachusetts and from Boston out to Worcester. Yes, but I like stories that are going on all over New England.
Sure. And does it matter if the person actually lives in the area or out of the area? For instance, I live in Seattle, and I have two brothers and a sister that live in Boston. So, and my sister works for the Restaurant Association. So I sometimes get ideas, and obviously I'm not there, but as an experienced reporter, know how to write a story and a query. So do you work with freelancers outside of the area, or do you tend to?
Yes, and I like freelancers who come to Boston and want to write a story here, but the problem is they don't necessarily do their homework. They don't know that we've just written a story about that particular place, you know, 3 months ago. As far as your sister working for the hypothetical or not, you know, whether it's real or not.
Yeah.
Her working for the National Restaurant Association, that means that any suggestions that she makes to you, you cannot use because of conflict of interest. So a conflict of interest is something that's a direct conflict. They're a client of your sister's, therefore you cannot write about them, but it can also be an appearance of a conflict.
Okay, so I'm going to ask because my sister actually is, but it's the Massachusetts Restaurant Association. So anything I pitched that she told me would be a conflict?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes. Yes. The Boston Globe's very, very strict about, as I said, it can be an appearance of a conflict, which means it's not a direct conflict, but it's too close for comfort.
Sure. And it couldn't be a trend versus an actual restaurant. Like we talk about trends in the industry versus restaurants.
Yes, it could be trends, but she couldn't tell you where to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would never. Yeah, I wouldn't do that as a journalist. But you know, we might be talking about a trend or something, and say, oh, that might be a great idea. But
yes,
this is all hypothetical. So
okay, that's all right. It's a good example.
So for you, go ahead.
You know, the best thing to do is to find out where you're going. If you want to do a, if you're coming to Boston and you want to do a story for me, find out where you're going, where you might be traveling while you're here, and then see if there is the query letters that I love is some quirky mom and pop on a side road, not at the beach, but 30 minutes before you get to the beach, 30 minutes before you get to the famous main city, you know, 20 minutes off the highway on the way to Tanglewood, some Mexican mom and pop that's making, like, unbelievable tortillas that the Mexican community in that area knows about, but I certainly don't know about, and our readers don't know about. But you've really got to do some some digging.
Right. And kind of be familiar with the publication before you pitch anything.
Well, be familiar with the publication, but after you find this mom and pop, you'll look up in the publication and see whether or not they've done the story. But in the first place, you have to just go. You can't follow the tourists. Those stories have all been done. My husband and I have a saying that if you go to the tourist area in any city in Europe or Eastern Europe or wherever you're going, and all the restaurants that the hotel is sending you to are to the right of the hotel, your job is to go to the left. Because that's the neighborhood that may be a little iffy. They may not speak English. They're not geared up to hand you an American menu. So it's the same in any place that you visit. You just have to leave the beaten path behind and then find the story there. And there are jillions of them, and they're all interesting.
Sure. So you mentioned you might pick 5 out of 75 queries. Tell us a little bit, in kind of in aggregate, with the freelancers you're working with. Are they highly experienced? How did you find them? Or have you been working with them for a long time?
A lot I've been working with for a long time. I put out a 16-page section every week. I have a restaurant reviewer, and every other person is a freelancer. I teach in a wonderful program at Boston University that offers a master's in gastronomy. When those students who get an A in my class, I bring into the Globe as freelancers. They know all of the Boston Globe quirks. They know newspaper quirks. They know newspaper feature writing, and they know what not to do, like high in the query on the query subject line. They know you can't send in a query that has, for instance, a typo or a, God forbid, spelling mistake. The entire query letter has been fact-checked the way a story would be fact-checked. They know that every story that comes in, I would like to see the top of a story that someone is pitching. So I heard Clay say that, you know, don't send me a website where you've got all your writing. Send me something specific. And I absolutely agree. I'm not going to comb through anybody's website because I don't have the time. But I'd love to see the top of the story. So, you know, if you found the tortilla place in Western Massachusetts that caters to the Mexican community, send me the top of your story. Send me your lead. Send me your nut graph. But when I do get people writing, sending in queries and writing the tops of stories, the stories do not have a nut graph, and that's one of the things that happens to make me nuts. So it may be a feature story, it may be a food story, it may be miles away from a news story, but I still have to know who did what and when and where. And a lot of freelance writers, especially food writers, don't think that that's really necessary. You know, you'll learn it by the end of the story. But what I think is that people lose interest if, in fact, you don't tell them what you can expect in this story. I think a nut graph serves a bigger purpose than catching you up on in a news story, you know, telling you exactly what's going on and maybe catching you up on the trial details so far or the murder so far or the investigation so far, which is crucial to a news story. In a feature story, it tells you why you should be interested in reading this. And I think that feature stories that don't have nut graphs lose their readers high up in the story.
Right, because they want to have that clear idea of where they're going or what they're going to learn.
Yes, exactly.
What's your favorite food story that you've been pitched by a freelance writer recently?
Well, I did get pitched about a tortilla, a mom-and-pop tortilla place in Western Mass. And they did have a really interesting story. They had a little taqueria, and it burned down, and the whole community rallied around to help them rebuild. And so they're about to open. So it's timely. Another one that I just got pitched was on almond milk outselling soy milk as the non-dairy substitute for consumers. Even though almonds are at an all-time high price, people have decided for various reasons that they don't want to drink soy milk, and they think that rice milk is too thin and not nutritious enough, and they've all turned to almond milk. So that's a story. It's not just a feature story, but it's something that's going on right now. It has a news angle. So I really like everything in the section to have a news angle. People who send me evergreen stories, which are stories that I can hang on to and run, I do need those stories to fill in between the stories that have a news peg. I'll search long and hard for some sort of a news peg if I think the story is interesting, or I'll hold the story for a month so that maybe we can turn it into a back-to-school story or a whatever. You know, I can make it more relevant.
Sure.
I don't want people to open up the section and not see things that are happening, not learn about things that are happening right now.
Right.
I want you to read the section and say, I had no idea XYZ. You know, I had no idea that almond milk was outstripping soy milk right now, or whatever else is in the section.
Going back to that almond milk story, did they actually localize it to Boston, or was it just a major national trend type piece?
It was a national trend piece, and then because everything has to be localized somehow, they interviewed a somebody in Boston who, in fact, is selling a lot of almond milk that he makes himself and puts into lattes in a bakery.
Sure.
So the people whose work I come back to know that I need somebody. If I need a story that whatever the subject is, even if it is national, like the almond milk story, they're going to bring it home. So I'm going to get some quotes from somebody nearby.
Right. No,
and there was also, I beg your pardon, excuse me for interrupting. There was also a doctor at one of the local Harvard teaching hospitals who said that, in fact, he doesn't like almond milk. So it was very local.
Right. I was actually going to ask you, since Linda had a question here, was whether you require people to interview their sources in person, or is over the phone acceptable?
Interviewing people over the phone is perfectly acceptable. Doing a whole story, the almond milk writer was a very skilled writer. And a skilled interviewer. Writing story after story that is what I call telephone journalism often has no personality. The story has no personality because you can't describe the person who's sitting opposite you. It's very limiting. And because of that, I don't really I'm not crazy about people from other parts of the country pitching me local stories, my pitching me stories for my region, because I don't feel like they're going to know the market well enough to really give it a local flavor.
Right, kind of have that sense of place or setting.
Yes, exactly, exactly, yes. Mm-hmm.
So since you actually work kind of in the feature section, I think most people believe that writing feature stories is just like writing for magazines. So can you tell us a little bit of what you feel the difference is between writing a feature for a newspaper versus writing for a magazine?
Well, magazines are changing now, but for until very, very, very recently, and only a few magazines do have more of a newspaper flavor to them now. Magazines had no live journalism going on. There were no interviews with people who would give their opinions about something, because magazines are so dependent upon advertisers that they never wanted to offend anyone. The line between advertising and an editorial in a newspaper is, I mean, for the first 25 years of my career, I did not know a single person on the business side of the newspaper. I only knew the newsroom. It was almost like there was an iron curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And magazines are very much the opposite. You'll see a feature story on the best places to eat in France in a magazine, and you'll see all these French ads for food and wine in France, and French wines and French airlines and all of that. We can't do that, although we do now, not me in particular, but there are special sections that come out in the Boston Globe that might, and we might tell advertising, we have a special section on wine coming out on such and such a date. And they'll see if they can sell wine ads.
And because I come from a background that worked for American City's Business Journal, mm-hmm. we used to have a special section every week. And mm-hmm. we had the editor of the special section was actually in the editorial department. And I know some magazines have them in the business department. Is that true? Which is true at the Globe for those kind? And is that an opportunity for freelancers?
They are opportunities for freelancers. Our special sections are mostly in the newsroom, in the news department, but they'll be all newspapers do these special sections on, you know, education or senior living, and those. I think, don't quote me on this, but I think they may come from the business side of the newspaper.
Sure.
But they are all of those special supplements are freelance opportunities. I want
right.
to say something about freelancers that I think is very
sure.
important for them to know. If you write a delightful query letter that has a little personality, everything is correct in it, it doesn't go on forever, I don't need to know everything you do, I don't care if you ski, don't wish me a good day, don't wish me a good weekend, don't ask me if I had a good weekend, forget all that stuff, I'm too busy. But if I get a freelance query that is correct, there are no mistakes in it, and it's a pretty delightful query that shows that the writer has a little personality when they're writing, and they maybe have a sense of humor. I may call up that person and say, you know, we've had enough clam articles to paper the walls, so I'm going to say no to your query, but send me another one and tell me what else you're up to. And I will just pick up the phone and call the person. I can count the times on one hand that a freelancer writes their name, their telephone number, and their email at the bottom of their query.
Wow.
They think that it is just press reply. But I'm an old-fashioned editor. I want to call them up and see, you know, do they speak the King's English? Do they really have a sense of humor? What's going on? Are they going to teach me anything when they write a story? Talk to me. Because people who can talk can write. I really do firmly believe that. So it's one of the things that I train my students to do, that, you know, I need to be able to pick up the phone and call you. If your cell phone number is not on your email, I am not calling you. It's pretty shocking, and a little thing.
Yeah, I find the same thing with just my corporate clients. Sometimes if I go to a website and you don't have your phone number there, how are
right.
people going to get a hold
right.
of you?
But right, six clicks away, you find the phone number.
Right, yeah, and you don't have time to look for that, so that's kind of really
yeah.
important information. I'm going to ask you one more question before we go
yes.
to some of the questions in the chat here, but can you give us a range of amount of pay that people at your size of a newspaper pay freelance writers?
Yes. I pay between $50 and $100 for a recipe, an original recipe. And I can tell you, because I'm trained as a chef, I can tell you 5 miles away if you got it from a book, which book you got it from. If people are in the business of taking recipes out of books and posing them as their own, it's not going to work. So those are between $50 and $100, and I do need recipes, and I need recipes that work, and I need recipes that are interesting and not chefy. I like home cooking. And I also pay between $200 and $500 for stories. A $500 story may be a cover story, you know, the lead story in the section, and that person has done a lot of work and almost always, you know, gone back and back to the person they're interviewing or the farm or wherever they're going, and they've earned their money and then some.
Okay.
And then, yes.
No, that's okay. So, if you have something to continue, go ahead.
Well, I have little bits,
okay.
Little items that I also pay $50, $75, $100 for, depending upon the length of a new implement that's all the rage that I don't happen to know about, and where you can get it in Boston. And that's all telephone journalism, and it doesn't really matter.
Right. I guess I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question when you
yes.
brought up. What else do you need, Cheryl? I mean, maybe we can know kind of what you're looking for these days. And
well, you know, somebody picked up the phone from Portland, Oregon, I think she lives in, and she just emailed me, and she said, you know, I'm a very good home cook, and I here are some things I've been making lately, and would you be interested in buying them? And I said, send me one recipe. I sent her this nine-page guidelines on how to write a recipe for me, because I feel very strongly that if you're going to send me a recipe, if you're sending me a recipe, write it in my style. I happen to have guidelines so that if you don't want to crawl through bostonglobe.com, then I can tell you, you know, how to write the recipe. If you send a recipe to Bon Appetit magazine, put it in Bon Appetit's style. If you send a recipe to Food and Wine magazine, put it in Food and Wine style. Every place has their own style. It's just common courtesy for the 15 or 10 ingredients that you're writing to write it in the style that I use or they use. Nobody does this. So another thing that's totally simple, the only people who do it are my students because they know it makes me nuts. So that's advice that people should know, and it will endear them to an editor.
Cheryl, do you think you could give us or maybe email me or post in the den where your guidelines are if they post it online so that if people are interested, they can take a look at those?
No, I just send them to writers who are writing for me. I prefer to just keep them in-house. But all you have to do is go on to bostonglobe.com and look at some recipes, and you'll see immediately, you know, I always spell out tablespoon, I always spell out ounce, and, you know, just little things like that.
Sure. Ashley had a question. Do you reject many of your queries because they are completely off base, or you just don't have the room, or she's looking for a little more insight there?
They're off base. We've done them. I don't have any first person in the section, or rarely first person. Very, very few essays. The reviewer writes in the first person, but it's not all I. So if it comes in the first person, I completely reject it. It means they haven't even ever looked at my section.
Right.
If they want to write a first person story. Other ones that I reject immediately are I'd like to do a story on the following three chefs. Everybody is chef fascinated, but I don't know if this person just coming in cold knows enough about cooking to interview a chef. Because I feel like people, you know, have to have a certain amount of expertise in order to be able to interview a chef and understand what they're talking about, or take a chef's recipe and translate it for a home cook.
Right, yeah. Christine asks, how long should you wait for an editor to respond to a query before calling them? And kind of maybe what's your personal opinion? Some people say if you don't hear back from an editor, you shouldn't bother them. Other people say, I'm so busy, maybe you should try. What's your rule of thumb?
I think that if you nudge me and you have a little sense of humor about it, I am happy to be nudged. I'm also, I think you said earlier in my bio, I'm the food stylist, or one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to train other people, but I'm one of the food stylists for my section. So so I may be food styling all day, typically on a Wednesday, because that's the day my section comes out and I have a minute to spare. And when I come in on Thursday, I'm just gobsmacked with, you know, another 300 emails. And if somebody sends a query, it may just fall through the cracks. And I intend to answer it. I try to answer. I mean, I'm known to answer all my email and answer it fast. So if I don't answer it, then I haven't gotten it. But to send back an email to say, did you get my query, and then I have to go searching to see what their query was, is something else that's on my don't do list.
Right.
Please resend me the query. Don't make me work that hard. So that's one piece.
Great. Clay, we have time for one more question. Did you want to ask Cheryl anything in particular? Or Cheryl, do you want to watch this Clay? Are you still on? I didn't check. I should have checked that first. He might.
I don't think he's there.
Yeah, I think he's already left. So anyway, Cheryl, great information. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And Clay, too. Coming up next week, we'll be doing a Den Success Stories call, and our guests will be Bree Brower, Jessica Lee Brown, Christy Valenti, and Gwen Boyle. And I know each of these women have great stories to tell about how they are succeeding as freelancers as a result of the Den. So we wish you well and hope you to see you next week. And I actually will be the person that is doing that call. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, all.
Thank you.